Good evening. K2 Romeo India Whiskey is my name, call letters. My name is Dick. And along with Mel, K2 Kilo Echo Yankee, we run a thing called the TechNet, which is a gathering of people helping each other with ham radio subjects. And after we finish our call-in questions, we then go to almost any subject in the world. We're going to make an attempt to go to the mailbag a little bit earlier today, but bear in mind that the writing questions are not the major portion, not the major emphasis of this TechNet. The major TechNet is the gathering of people who verbally tell each other how to do things better. And it's not just Mel and Dick that have the answers. It's obviously it's a group of people listening who help us out with those answers. That's where an awful lot of the information is coming from. And when a person writes in with a technical question, he doesn't have that gathering to his advantage. It's one of the reasons why we're trying to de-emphasize write-in questions. The TechNet was never intended to be a free written consulting service. That was not its intent. It's a verbal gathering of the clan to help each other learn how to do ham radio better, how to get more fun out of it. A person signs into the TechNet, and we prefer to have you sign in as opposed to write in, by giving us your call letters, your name, and a confirming yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A frequent sign-in would sound like this, N2EO, Rich and Yes. Do we have any check-ins? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
N2EO, Rich, and no questions tonight.
Rich recognized. Anyone else?
WS2N4, with a Phoenix Mars update.
Looking forward to hearing your space report, Paul. So far we get Rich and Paul. Anyone else?
82ZI, Kevin, just listening.
Kevin with a no. Anyone else?
W2LAR, Mark, just listening.
Mark.
Good evening all, K2KEY.
Mark with a no, Mel with a yes. Anyone else? Gee, so far we have no real questions here tonight. Must be somebody wants to know something.
KC2RJW, yes.
And Mr. RJW, what's your name, sir?
My name is Joe. I'm just trying out, I'm just turning on a new rig. And I had an antenna question.
You hit the jackpot, Joe. My favorite question. Mel and I just love antenna questions. And if it's okay with you, we're going to ramble on for a long time about your antenna question when we get to it. Anyone else with any questions or comments, give me your call letters and name right now.
Kilo Charlie 2, Oscar Juliet Oscar, Howard, no questions.
Okay, Howard with a no. Anyone else? One last call. Anyone with check-ins for the TechNet, particularly if you've got a question or a comment, give me a call, letters, and name right now. Maybe we'll have some later. Joe, looks like you're number one on the runway tonight, and you may be the only one, so take your time. Give us all the juicy details of your antenna question. KC2RJW, K2RIW, my name is Dick.
KC2RJW, how you doing tonight, Dick? Yeah, I live in a co-op, and I'm sort of restricted with the types of antennas that I can put up. I have an option of going with two types of vertical antennas, one with the counterpoise and one without counterpoise. And I checked into both of them, and one bit of information that I got is that I really don't need a counterpoise if I buy this one particular brand. although I think in the past, maybe a month or so ago, you had mentioned that a counterpoise is more suitable for a vertical antenna.
I presume this is a 80 to 10 meter antenna you're talking about. You didn't mention the frequency range. And it's perfectly legal here for us to discuss brand name. So what brand name and model number is the one that says it doesn't require a counterpoise? And what's the brand name or model number of the one that does? So we've got a little more information there before I launch into this one. Back to you, Joe.
Yeah, the one that was recommended was a BB-7T Diamond multi-band antenna. And the other option was the X500HNA, which is a with a counterpoise. It's a 40 meters to plus 6 plus 2 plus 7 centimeters.
Wow, that's a lot of frequency, 40 meters up to 432. Wow, and that's the one I think you said that does require a counterpoise. Now, antennas that claim they don't need a counterpoise fall into mostly one category, and that is if the antenna itself, the radiating portion of it, is electronically, not necessarily mechanically, but electronically a half wavelength long, and you're feeding it at one end, the impedance of the end that you're feeding is so high that the counterpoise is not as required. You can almost get away with it, particularly a half wavelength antenna that some guys have used when they're on a balcony of an apartment, seven stories above the grade, and using as a counterpoise just for the metal railing with a half wavelength radiator. That has worked out extremely well. And also another thing that Mel and I have developed a lot of faith in, Mel has got experimental evidence for it, and that is a half wavelength antenna that is purely vertically suspended, a real half wave, call it dipole, but you don't necessarily have to feed it in the center. You could feed it at one end. Mel's also discovered that when the dipole is tilted at a particular angle, and the bottom of it sort of forms a catenary curve, a somewhat parabolic curve, because he doesn't pull it up tight, he gets a lot of performance out of that. But let's backstep a little bit. What a quarter wave ground plane type vertical antenna really is a kind of a dipole which is using the ground plane structure as a mirror image, so that you get a real quarter wave monopole above ground, you get a mirror image of one below ground, and as long as that mirror acts like it's got sufficient conductivity to it, enough reflectivity, let's call it, then that can work out very well. But that's a quarter wave or vertical antenna does require a lot of ground plane radials if you want high efficiency. And the part that's hard to understand is that you may follow the manufacturer's recommendations. Maybe he only wants you to put down two radials on each band. And as far as banding wave ratio is concerned, you'll make a very good measurement. You'll have a 1.5 banding wave ratio. It appears as though all the power goes down the coax and doesn't come back. And you'd like to believe it's all being radiated in space. In reality, quite a bit of it could be coupled into the Earth, because Earth is a pretty good dummy load if you don't make it look like a conductor by putting down a lot of ground plane radials. There's two or three solutions to this. One, use
repeater, timeout.
Solution number one would be to use a small number of radials, but have the whole antenna physically high above the ground, so therefore, even though your counterpoise is not as reflective as you'd like it to be, not acting like a mirror, because the Earth that's possibly acting like a dummy load is so far away, you don't run into that problem. It's one solution. Another extremely good solution is to truly make the antenna half wave. And in the case of an 80-meter dipole, that would mean that the top of the dipole would be 130 feet in the air. A 40-meter dipole would be 60-some-odd feet in the air, or more. So a pure vertical antenna is one of the things that we amateurs have used very little. We haven't quite understood what's going on with the counterpoise. Another way of looking at a counterpoise is it's the, let's call it the reserve of electrons, so to speak. Your transmitter is really a kind of electron pump. And by way of the transmission line, you make it act like the pump is right at the feed point of the antenna. And so you're pumping electrons into the antenna, the radiating section, on one half cycle and pumping them back out on the other half cycle. But you got to pump them to and from some place. And that place is called the counterpoise or the other half of the dipole, if it's a real symmetric half-wave dipole. So without that counterpoise, you're attempting to pump electrons out of something that's not very substantial, and it ends up being RF hot. And so a counterpoise with too few radials ends up RF hot. It's in contact with the ground. There's a lot of coupling of its RF energy in the ground, and you can lose efficiency. So the insidious part of all this is that an antenna with low efficiency will measure good on VISWA. Receiving-wise, it'll seem to work pretty well. Transmitting-wise is where you'll be hurting. Just a simple clip lead connected to the center conductor of your receiver won't move the S-meter very much, but on a good day, you'll hear signals rather well. The receiver is kind of forgiving. A transmitter is not. If you're trying to radiate 100 watts into the air, and you're only radiating 1 watt, because you're coupling the rest of it into the earth, I'm making an extreme example here, you'd be a QRP station, even though, you know, a low-power station, even though you didn't intend to be. You tell a bunch of guys that you're a low-power station, and they will try very hard to suck that weak signal out of the noise and give you a lot of credit. Without that information, if you don't radiate a good, strong signal, an awful lot of contacts don't get made because the person doesn't want to put forth all the extra effort. I'm presuming that the Diamond antenna is the one that claims that it doesn't require a ground plane, a counterpoise, and if it's electronically a half wavelength, that could be true. I want to get Mel
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
Mel has quite a bit more familiarity with many of these antennas. His group, the Kings County Radio Club, from time to time has a shootout in which they literally go to Floyd Bennett Field, among other places, and compare these antennas side by side. So with those two particular antennas that Joe mentioned, Mel, I wonder if your crew of guys have a specific experience with them as to what they like and what they don't like. K2KEY, K2RIW.
And then 2EO with a comment.
2HWW also comment.
Fantastic. Hey, Joe, you're going to get a lot of information. So, Mel, Rich, and Howie, in that order. Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Oh, I've had experience with a couple of them. Major brand makes of verticals, and I've tried them in a number of configurations. A number of them either have their own self-contained sort of radio type of device, and you know, really don't specify the necessity for additional radios. However, they have usually in the bottom in the small print that they do have radio kits available. I have tried a number of these antennas in a number of locations, anything from ground level and elevated levels and all from whatever I can possibly do. And in almost all cases, I didn't find them any spectacular results out of any of those antennas, to tell you the truth, that I couldn't achieve. With the so-called simple, like you say, halfway vertical type of configuration of the dipole stick, I didn't see that these antennas will outshine any of them. They were, some of them did equal, I'd say, fairly close, but nothing a spectacular result. You know, for the price and that shiny piece of metal you look at, you look at it and this thing has to work terrifically because it does look terrific. It looks great sitting up there, and also it's the price tag is high enough that it should give you a terrific performance. But That's only one of my opinions. Let's hear from the other guys, see what they have to say. Go ahead, Dick.
Very fine, Mel. Yeah, I'm upset about the fact that a quarter-wave ground plane radial, quarter-wave antenna, vertical ground plane type, the center of radiation is really right at ground level, below the trees, below the buildings, and so on. If you happen to have a tree nearby, a building or whatever, and you can literally suspend a vertical half-wave dipole, and all of the diagrams in the book for simple antennas will show us a horizontal half-wave dipole, and they never show us a vertical half-wave dipole. Therefore, that antenna is never given enough consideration. You suspend a vertical half-wave dipole where the center of it is showing to be, in the case of 80 meters, 60-some-odd feet above the ground. That center of radiation higher above the ground always helps. Altitude is the main thing that makes an antenna work well. Let's see what Rich has got to say. I bet you've had some of this experience, Rich. N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, K2RIW, TechNet, Weimark, N2EO. Yes, I have, Dick. I haven't had personal experience with the two that he mentioned, but one of the people on this repeater used that Comet antenna, or who it was, but he got terrible results. Terrible results. I can tell you what does work. I use a Cushcraft R8. It's ground-mounted. It's an electrical half-wave vertical. Have it 12 feet off the ground, which is what Cushcraft recommends. And it uses 7 48-inch counterpoise radials. And it seems to be... I'll agree with Mel on this. It's probably no better than a dipole. In fact, I also have the 80-meter dipole fed with open wire line. Now I can switch back and forth between the two. Half the time, the vertical is better. Half the time, the dipole is better. So you have to say they're about equal. So, you know, I mean, a no-gain antenna is a no-gain antenna. There's no magic vertical that's going to get out like a beam. But he said he's in a restricted area. I think he said he's in a co-op or a condo. I think he said a co-op. But he has a problem getting up maybe a halfway horizontal dipole. Maybe he has trouble suspending a vertical dipole that maybe doesn't have something to attach it to. I would say for him a Cushcraft R8 would do very well. Like I say, I use one here. I've had it now, I guess, about 8 or 9 years. And the best testimonial I can give you is I have a spare in an unopened box sitting in my attic should they ever stop making it. Back to that in 2EO.
Sure sounds like you like that particular antenna, Rich. I buy a spare just to make sure. Sounds like you really like it. And that 12 feet above the ground, I guarantee, is giving you extra performance. And being a half wave electronically is giving you extra performance. You made another very good point, and that is just because some of these antennas look attractive to the eye and have a price tag that would suggest that, gee, there must be a lot of quality there because it looks good and I'm paying a lot of dollars, therefore it's got to work well. And there's an amazing number of guys who have put up a simple wire dipole, which has no attractiveness to it at all. In fact, the neighbors and your fellow amateurs, if you don't point it out to them, might not even see it, as opposed to the ground plane radial, a vertical ground plane antenna, a multi-band type with all of its side tuning coils and whatever. It looks like something very elaborate. But people who have compared the two are sometimes disappointed with the ground plane compared to a simple dipole. Let's see what Howie's got to say about this. Howie, which of those antennas or types of antennas have you had experiences with? K2RIW listening.
Dick, I played with dipoles, and I agree, use a dipole. Dick, I actually broke into to ask a question on the same subject matter. And you know, you might want to use hamsticks. Dick, if you have a bracket with two antennas like hamsticks, a dipole, and the one side of the dipole is your hot, the other side is your, you know, you go to your shield, your ground site. And if the ground is not isolated, the shield is not isolated from the mast, do you think that would cause a problem, or do you still think it would resonate? You have a dipole mounted, a horizontal dipole mounted to a pipe, but one side of the shield is actually connected to the pipe because they use the chassis, they use a chassis-mounted connector. I'm actually looking at the hamstick. Hamstick makes a mounting bracket. You can take two hamsticks and put them in a dipole configuration. The only thing is, from what I could see, they didn't isolate the ground. You think that would be a problem?
Yes and no. It's going to get out, but now the things you're worried about are, number one, is the outside shield of the coax cable going to get hot? And if you're running a D-104 mic in the shack, and you put your lips up to it and you draw an arc, that's unpleasant. Second of all, two guys putting up the exact same antenna of the type you just described can get very different results. One guy mounts it to a mast which is absolutely not resonant at any of the frequencies he uses, and so with the right kind of a balancing structure on the coax cable, the coax is not hot. The pipe that he mounted it to is not resonant, but the hamsticks, one going to the right and one going to the left, are resonant, and that can work well. The next guy puts up the exact same antenna, but his particular support structure is more substantial, happens to hit resonance, and he's going to get rather different results. Not bad results, different results. He's got more vertical component, he's got hotter coax, even though he's using a balance, and so on. Picture yourself as a pump. That's what the end of the feed line is. It's the transmitter acting like it's there. If the feed line is doing a good job, it acts like your transmitter is a 1-inch cube mounted right at the feed point of the antenna, and it's trying to pump electrons from the left-hand side of the antenna to the right-hand side of the antenna. That's what it does in the first half cycle. In the next half cycle, it does the opposite. And that's how it forces this resonant current to flow into your antenna structure by which you get efficient radiation. You resonate first, then you radiate. Resonance consists of electronically a half wavelength or multiple half wavelengths. That's what electronic resonance really is. And you can make it by way of a mirror image with a perfect ground plane, or your hamstick to the right or the left, and the hamsticks are a balanced structure and with the right kind of a balance. And my recommendation with the hamstick to the right and to the left, use the same support structure, but it isn't, you've got the resources to insulate your mounting structure from the support structure so that the hamstick that goes on the shield is electronically isolated from ground by way of the balancing device and an insulated method of mounting it. That could be a simple piece of plexiglass block could do the job very well, and you still get all the mechanical support, the physical strength of your mechanical support. Those are some of my recommendations on that one. But we're getting a little bit off of Joe's original subject of both the diamond antenna and the X500 H. I can't even read my own writing, but you know which one I'm talking about. I know that you said you're in a co-op and therefore you're restricted, although even these two antennas are not a small structure. Apparently you've got permission.
Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
If I understand correctly, Joe, apparently you do have permission to mount these antennas on the roof of the co-op or in the front yard. Give us a couple more words about that, Joe. KC2RJW. K2RJW in the TechNet.
KC2RJW. Yes, there are some other hams in the project that we delivered in a 900 unit complex garden apartment. They allow us to put antennas on the rear. There is a similar antenna which I've been looking at, 22 foot high. They have the exact, almost the exact same model at another apartment building here. And all I have to do is submit a description of the antenna, and that's basically all there is to it.
That's a rather cooperative co-op. 900 units And in the rear, you're allowed to put the antennas after I'm just making application and telling them what you're putting up. Now, one of the things that we amateurs have discovered is that normal citizens, 99% of the time, do not see wire. Particularly if you make it green-colored wire and you put it up against the tree. That's what Mel did. So, by way of the co-op apartment complex, it sounds to me like it's multiple structures with some airspace in between. If you suspended a real half-wave dipole between buildings, it would require some permission, but it would be a very unobtrusive-looking structure. At first, you're going to think that you have to hang a piece of coax cable in the center, up in the air, and that coming down to the ground is going to be unattractive. Bear in mind that with a little bit of extra smart, you could take a half-wavelength antenna. Don't bother putting the insulator in the center where you put the coax cable by putting a loading coil at one end. You can see the half-wave dipole at the left-hand side or the right-hand side, right at the tip, and you can still get the near 100% efficiency. So therefore, one side of the dipole comes over to a building, that's where the coax is, that feeds it. The other side just goes out into the air to a egg insulator, depending on what length you want, and then the remaining piece of thin wire or string or whatever brings it over to the other building. Do you think they would give you permission to put up that kind of a half-wave dipole between buildings? Because it's something that would be so invisible to the normal eye, I think they would quite possibly go for it, Joe. That would be an extremely inexpensive antenna that, believe it or not, could very well give you higher performance than the multi-hundred dollar thing that you're thinking of buying. I didn't say you shouldn't also buy it. Do both. But I think you're going to get an awful lot of bang for the dollar out of what I just described. KT2RJW, KQLIW in the TechNet.
Sell an antenna like that, Ed said, with the matching network.
Okay, we're going to have, after Joe has his talk, we're going to ask for a little bit more description from you, Howie. But Joe first. Joe, do you think they would give you permission to do that?
Yeah, KT2RJW. No, I really don't think they would. They're very fussy, even with the cable company that came in. They make them more neat, the wiring and so on, and use proper clips and so on. And they're fussy about filling the holes through the brick building. There is a cable that runs between our complex and the next complex over. And if I was to put it directly on that cable, and that might work out. And it's a possibility if I don't say anything to them. But I really don't like to do that.
Yeah, give me a couple more words on this one, then. How many feet long is that cable, in other words, the spacing between the buildings, and how many feet high approximately is the building? If the building happens to be 60 feet or more high, just the vertical extent of the building gives you a whole lot of possibilities. Back to you, Joe, for a couple more words on that.
The two-story brick building, and I'm guessing 15, 17 feet runs from one building to another. So, you know, it would be a similar to a dipole. The antenna that I was looking at is 22 foot long, and I would have that on the rear side of the building, and the roof would restrict them somewhat. And there's a tree to the south, which would be roof on the east, three on the south.
Okay, I know what Mel is thinking. Tell me, how tall is that tree to the south? Back to you, Joe.
The tree's got to be 30 feet high, 35.
What Mel would do in a case like that is he would take his green plastic-covered wire, he would string it into that tree from as high as he could get in the tree, maybe by way of a gin pole, you know, climb the tree as high as you could get, and then by way of a pole and a mechanism on the end of the pole, he manages to mount the wire higher up on the tree than he could reach, and then suspend the wire, the green-colored wire, down the side of the tree to an anchor point on the ground, and at least on 40 meters, that would work like a charm. In fact, before we go too much further here, Mel, if you had that particular application, I know I'm skipping over Howie for a second here. Mel, if you had that 40-foot-high tree, or maybe it's a 60-foot-high tree, and if you're willing to operate on 40 meters and on up with the wire directly the right size, and by way of loading coils, you could make a 60-foot-high tree operate on 80 meters. I bet you your first approach, if you wanted to take the economic approach, would be to use that tree. See if I'm right on that one. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Oh, most definitely, this is K2KEY. The tree provides a very good anchorage, and like you say, that piece of wire is very unobtrusive, very cheap, of course. And what you can do, you could actually anchor into the tree, hang from the tree a vertical section, and then spread out radials even. I see a number of those configurations where they've actually had a 40-meter antenna with 33 feet up to the tree, and then the radials actually just spreading out along the limb. In fact, the handbook has a section on antennas. The ARL handbook has a section on antennas of the, camouflage-type antennas for restricted situations, and that's one of them that they feature. They call it a tree-mounted vertical, and it will work extremely well. No doubt about it, the tree has actually been visible as far as the antenna goes. So, Dick, I think, like you say, it's in that configuration, or if it's 60-some-odd feet tall, in a vertical type of dipole, no doubt. I think that's the best bang for your buck. And I think they would be happy with it at the co-op, because they're sure it wouldn't be seen over.
Yeah, as you can see, Joe, Mel and I have fallen in love with that tree of yours because it's the tallest thing you've got in your vicinity. And as we've all discovered, there are three things to make an antenna work well. Altitude. It's almost like what the real estate people say. Location, location, location. So any method by way you use that tree for a vertical-like antenna is going to give you a lot of bang for the dollar. And Mel knows ways of getting a hold of this green-colored plastic wire, stranded wire, which when he points it out, he's got this vertical dipole in the tree in the front of his house on in his front yard where he lives in Manhattan Beach, Brooklyn, and he can point out that vertical antenna that's in the tree in the front yard, close to the street, to his fellow ham radio operators. And until they walk over and touch it, they don't see it. It's that invisible. And it's not the rubber covered, it's a plastic covered green wire that he's discovered, which survives the ultraviolet very well. So you've got a number of possibilities here. I would prefer the non-radio requiring ground, non-counterpoise requiring antenna, and put counterpoise, a few counterpoise elements down there anyhow. But still, any vertical mounted antenna on the ground has a center of radiation that's so low that with nearby buildings and trees and whatever, it's going to give you somewhat restricted performance. The tree that we're talking about, RF-wise, is transparent. A single tree at HF frequencies isn't there. I'll admit that a mile of trees, because you have to transmit through a whole forest before the signal gets out into the air, that would hurt. But a single tree is foregone transparent, and it's a darn good support mechanism, and I would recommend you do consider mechanisms of using that tree. And by the way, the tree could be the second antenna if you decide to buy the ground plane radial anyhow. And one of the things that we're all slowly discovering or rediscovering is that HF signals always experience Faraday rotation. You talk to that DX station, maybe he's in London, DX to you, or to me, and that signal going through the ionosphere rotates a few times. You you launch a vertical signal in New York, and it may end up as a horizontal signal when it gets to London because of what the Faraday rotation is doing to it today. And so, therefore, that's part of the reason why when Rich tells us he's got horizontal and vertical antennas and he flips back and forth between the two, one will work good on Monday and the other one works good on Tuesday because the ionospheres behave differently. So, ultimately, I think you're going to want to put up more than one antenna if they give you permission to do it, and because at least one of those antennas... Because at least one of those antennas can be so invisible, I think you'll have no trouble getting permission for the second antenna. These are some of our suggestions, Joe. By the way, when you finally do decide what you're going to do and you try it out, whether it works well or it doesn't work well, please come back and tell us about it. KC2RJW, K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2LIW, K2RJW. All right, I'll do that, and I do thank you for the information. I'm going to have to think about that tree. I own the co-op, but they have this thing about we're going to throw you out. So I got to watch my step here. I'm going to think about that, though. There's no big deal. All right, I thank you. You have a good night.
Yeah, you're not going to put that tree under any stress with what you're doing, a very minor function of stringing a vertical piece of wire. I forgot to go back to Howie. Howie, I know you wanted to give Joe some further advice. Go ahead, Howie.
Dick, put me at the end of the list until we go.
You're there. You're there, Rich. Go ahead, Howie.
Dick, there's a company. I don't know if it's Alpha Delta, but they had an article in QSC. This company made these antennas for 80, 40, 20, 15. And what they were was just a wire antenna with a box at the end which had a coil and a connector. Basically what they were N-fed. They said it was great for an application where you could not put radios up and you could not, you know, feed the antenna in the middle. It's basically an N-fed wire that you could either mount vertically, horizontally, and you had a connector at one end. I don't remember what the price is. They weren't that expensive, and they came in like on 20 meters, 40 meters, and 80 meters. And all it was, it had an SO239 at one end, with a little box which had the network. And it was basically an NZ, and they said this was great because you didn't need a ground counterpoint. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a few more words on that. In the case of a half-wave dipole in free space, just to be keeping it simple, the center impedance, when it's the right length to be resonant, is a 72-ohm resistor. That's what a half-wave dipole fed in the center is. If you decide to start feeding it off the center, the impedance you feed becomes higher and higher, and the extreme is that you feed one end with reference to ground. Don't put an egg insulator in the center where you normally would put the feed line. Just make it a continuous half-wavelength piece of wire, electronically a half-wavelength long if you don't have enough length, by putting loading coils in certain places. But still, when you feed the antenna from the end instead of the center, at the end you see an impedance something like 2,000 ohms instead of 72 ohms. At first, that would scare you. However, a very simple step-up coil, in other words, a multi-turn coil that has a capacitor across it to resonate it, the bottom of the coil is grounded, the top of the coil touches the half-wave dipole at the tip, at the end, and your coax cable taps up on it. The shield goes to ground, just like the bottom of the coil also goes to ground, and the center conductor it tapped up one or two turns on that coil. When you choose the right tap point, the coil is resonant. The top of the coil is a 2,000 ohm impedance. The tap point is a 50 ohm impedance for your cable. And that's what's probably in that box that you're describing, Howie. Very similar to what happens with a 5/8 wave ground plane 2-meter mag mount antenna. If you ever look into one of those, because you're feeding a 5/8 wave long piece of wire, which is even longer than a half wave, it's a little bit inductive, but the loading coil at the bottom brings the 5/8 wave up to 3/4 wave, where it's resonant again, and again you're feeding a high impedance point. You take apart one of those 5/8 wave ground plane mag mounts for 2 meters, and you'll see it's really just a coil where the coax cable is tapped up on the coil, and the top of the coil goes to the antenna. So With a little bit of experimentation or finding the right article, you can definitely feed a dipole from one end. It's extremely unpopular because people don't see the schematic for that often reproduced in the books. Everyone thinks that a half-wave dipole has got to be parallel to the ground and fed in the center. And Mel and a lot of other people are discovering that feeding it from one end is an extremely attractive way to go. You don't have to worry about the feed line being up in the air and how to suspend it and how to protect it from wind and vibration and everything else. So don't be afraid to feed a dipole from the end. The RF doesn't know the difference because, let me drop, real radiation doesn't take place in one step. Remember, I've quite often said we resonate first, then we can radiate. That pulse of electrons that your electronic pump, your transmitter, shoves into the dipole, into the antenna, in the left to right direction on the first half cycle, and the right direction, right to left direction on the second half cycle, you're pumping these electrons into the antenna, and they bounce back and forth. That pulse of electrons you put in there, the cloud of electrons, has to bounce back and forth at least 20 times or more before the energy of them gets radiated into space. The electrons don't go into space. You're pumping these electrons, you're creating an electronic current, an RF current. The current creates a magnetic field, and the magnetic field gets radiated into space. I'm overly simplifying it, but that's essentially what takes place. But every one of our antennas, with the exception of a rhombic antenna or a beverage antenna, these antennas that are a zillion wavelengths long, with those two exceptions, all of our antennas are standing wave structures. Within the antenna itself, there is an extremely high standing wave ratio, something like 20 to 1. So that pulse of electrons has to bounce back and forth. Once you look at it from that point of view, you realize you're ringing a bell, or you're swinging a flywheel, and you're putting energy in on each swing, or your child is swinging back and forth on the swing, and you apply a little bit of energy when you give them a push on each swing. But you can stop pushing the child, and they will glide for quite a period of time. You can stop putting energy into your antenna, and it will glide for quite a period of time. And it's only 20 or 30 cycles, which is only a few microseconds. So by human standards, the signal seems to die out immediately. RF-wise, it doesn't. With a fast oscilloscope, you could confirm that you're really ringing a bell. So when you decide to ring the bell, you can either ring it from the center or ring it from one side. With the proper kind of a impedance matching network, both will work equally as well. And the idea of feeding it from one side mechanically can give you some great advantages with the kinds of antennas we're talking about, like a wire suspended from a tree. I think your feed line, I believe you're feeding it in the center, Mel, on your green dipole that's in the front tree of your house. But have you ever considered feeding it from one end? And have you ever known of anyone who has actually done that? K2KUI for any comments on this. K2RIW on the TechNet.
We want another comment, Dick.
Right. Well, actually, the dipole is convenient for me to feed in the middle, and I'll tell you why. The wire comes out of my Radio Shack window. That's on the second floor. The wire is on several hanging supports that support the coax cable along the lower part of the eave of the house. And when it leaves that eave point, it only travels a short distance to the feed point of this vertical dipole. So in other words, it would take me more wire to feed it down at either end. This is like the shortest the shortest point actually between the Radio Shack and the antenna is actually winds up literally in the middle of Dick, in this case with my my start. Well, I guess you can call them somewhat of a sloping, the catenary type or whatever, dipole, because it's not pure vertical nor pure horizontal. It makes that sort of arc on the bottom like you would see on a bridge, you know, the cable, the way they hang from the main tower down to the support deck over.
Yep, that's called a catenary. In your case, at the bottom of the antenna, a parabolic-like thing. And I can see now you've got the shortest possible feed line to go from the second floor of your house straight out parallel to the ground, over to the tree, and you're feeding the dipole in the center. I can see how, in your case, that's a good way to go. In the case of Joe's situation, possibly his feed line has to go to the backyard by going across the ground, in which case, for him to feed it from ground level, if that's what he decides to do, he's got a lot going for it. Howie, I think you wanted to make some comments on this. Go right ahead, Howie.
Comment on that N-fed dipole. That coil, you can think of it as an auto transformer. That's the way I think of it. You have a coil, one end goes to the antenna, and you cap it up with the capacitor. Would you consider it an auto transformer in simple terms?
Absolutely. It is an RF auto transformer. And that auto transformer, you've got a small number of turns you're tapping with the coax cable. You've got a large number of turns you're capping with the antenna. And therefore, it's stepping the 50 ohms up to 2,000. I'm saying that when you feed a dipole from one end, the impedance is in the vicinity of 2,000 ohms. Maybe it's 2,700, but it doesn't matter. You'll find it out real fast by experimenting with the taps. And if you make the coil resonant by putting the right size capacitor across it, that would help also. You don't have to put a capacitor across it. You can make the dipole a little bit shorter than the right resonant length. It will give you a capacitive reactance, and that will be the capacitor that forces the coil to be resonant. So you got lots of ways of going here. You can consider the coil that steps up the impedance of 2,000 ohms as a kind of a bottom loading coil. And is it a loading coil? Is it an impedance step-up device? Is it an auto transformer? The answer is yes, yes, and yes. It's all of the above. But it's an antenna type that hasn't been given enough of a fair shake from my point of view. The books don't show it, and for reasons that are mysterious to Mel and I, not many people have built one of these. And arguably one of Mel's most effective HF antennas is this simple piece of green wire in his tree out in the front of his property, close to the street, that nobody sees. It's one of his highest performance antennas. My guess is there are days, Mel, where that antenna gives you more performance than your full one wavelength loop that's 40 feet in the air. Is that approximately true? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Let's talk about my experiment. Well, I really wanted to find out for myself, definitively, what is really working, how does it work. So I have, like, for 80 meters, I have the vertical for 80 meters, that's 65 feet tall, has 100 radios buried. I have a dipole that is at 65 feet. That's a full-size dipole, 125 feet from end to end. And then I have the loop, the full-wave loop, that's 272 feet. Held by four posts, four supporting spots, fed with open wire feeders, 600 ohm open wire feeders. Now, if I want to just, let me let it drop and I'll explain each function of what happens with each antenna. Okay. When I'm talking to my friends on 75 meters a few nights a week on 3.820 and get on 3 nights a week with them, they're in Massachusetts, they're in Pennsylvania, they're down in Virginia Beach, down in Florida. There are quite a number of us get on as a nitro group on 75 meters. By the way, everybody is welcome. It's not an exclusive group by any shot. And we discuss almost everything also. And I find the loop, the full wave loop outside, as my best working antenna for that. For DXing on the low end of it, down the CW portion of the band, most of the time the vertical seems to outshine the dipole somewhat. That's the full-size 65-foot vertical with 100 radios. But there are times where the dipole is also at 65 feet. Does maybe outshine, I don't know, again, Faraday rotation. You know, you've got to switch back and forth. The loop, the horizontal loop, is usually not that effective. It seems to be, as they say, somewhat of a cloud warmer, but not really what you look for in a DX antenna. So that's my experiment, basically, how they came about. And then, of course, we went into, I'm not going to get into the situation of matching the loop, the methods I used, and all those. Leave that but we're just talking in general the performance of the antennas by themselves. So this is what I've come up with. Let me let it drop one more time. Now for 40 meters, I am using I guess you could describe it as a parabolic vertical or a parabolic dipole. It has that vertical, sort of that sloping vertical section that comes off the tree at about 65 feet. All this is all on one tree. Believe it or not, this is a big old pine tree that stands about 70 feet tall. And this one wire of 40 meter comes off, slopes around also down towards and comes to within about 12 feet of ground where it's tied off onto a post over. It's actually a sign, no parking sign. But you can't see any of these antennas, like I say. And then I got a 30 meter antenna also on the same situation. So these are all type of dipoles fed in the middle because, again, like I said, it's convenient for my feed line. And they work phenomenally. I will honestly say on any of those bands, anything I hear, I have worked. This pile up, in most cases, I may not be the first, but I'm within a reasonable number of contacts to work that station, take over.
Very nice experience that you're describing to us, Mel. We amateurs get a lot of bang for the dollar out of the antennas we set up in our backyard with our own hands. Sometimes we go out and buy them, but that's one of the great places where we can do a lot of experimenting. In the early days of ham radio, when Mel and I were just cutting our teeth ham radio-wise, a lot of guys built their own transmitters and built their own receivers. Nowadays, a transmitter or receiver has got the equivalent of 50 tubes in there by way of all the transistors, and so nobody builds a transmitter or receiver anymore. You take a half week or a week's worth of your salary, and you go out and buy it. It would take you a year to build it, but it takes you a week's salary to buy it. And when you spend that week's salary to buy it, if you don't like it a year from now, you can sell it and get a lot of your money back. Whereas you build a rig with your own hands, and 99% of the time you're going to die with it in your hands, and no one else is going to buy it from you, with rare exception. So we don't build our transceivers anymore. There's both goods and bads about that. We get a lot more performance nowadays out of a modern-day frequency synthesized transceiver with digital signal processing and all kinds of doodads in there and computer interfacing and so on. So we get a lot of performance for our money with modern-day receivers and transmitters. But when it comes to antennas, I recommend that when in doubt, put up a couple more. I never, with rare exceptions, found somebody who put up a second, third, and fourth antenna on a particular band and said, gee, I didn't need those second, third, and fourth antennas. There were times when those other antennas do you some good. Anybody with any further comments on all of the above, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the second half.
KD2XWW with a general comment, Dick.
Okay. Howie recognized, who was the second person that doubled with Howie?
KC2OJO, Howard.
Okay, Howard number one and Howard number two. Was there a third person? Okay, Howard number one from Brooklyn. Go ahead, Howard.
Hi, OJO. Yeah, Dick, I just want to let you know the reason I'm actually going to be picking two hamsticks. I'm going to be making an antenna in the house for 80 meters. I am going to get on AM just to let Mel know. I'm going to probably go out and buy a used Gossett P76. I'm going to go back to my childhood, Dick. Just want to let you know that radio uses 5R4s. They use vacuum tube rectifiers. It's an AM rig, 826 meters, and I'm going to use it on 80 and 40. I don't know if anybody knows that. So right now I'm going to get two ham sticks, probably put it in my house, put it in the other room. I don't want to be in the same room with it because the small antenna's going to have a high field. And we're going to probably get on 80 and 40 meters with AM, Dick, K2RIW. So, you know what? You don't have to build your own equipment, but you can go back to the old days.
Yeah, Rich is doing that, too, by way of all the Collins equipment he likes to restore. And that 5R4 you're going to be rectifying with is probably a 5R4GY, a very popular full-wave rectifier tube, pair of diodes with a common 5-volt filament between the two, which I think is a Stucci version of a 5U4, which used to be used for the main rectifier of television sets. Okay, Howie number 2, KC2, OJO. Go ahead, whether has a cure question or comment, Howard.
Dick, I had a question, maybe it's a comment. I have been using an N-fed half-wave of 20 meters, but a horizontally fed half-wave instead. And what he commented was that he got lots of different reports from people who had done this. Some said it doesn't work at all, and some said, hey, it works great. And he couldn't understand why. So what he did is use a transformer, basically external. And of course it was isolated. It was an unbalanced to, I guess, what he found was when he returned to secondary, that was the high impedance and the coaxial cable in a horizontal configuration. Sometimes he got good results and sometimes not. And he ascribed that to the length of the coax and things of that nature. However, what he did find was that when he took the secondary and one end went to the end fed, and he put about a 0.05 to 0.1 wavelength radial as a counterpoint, it worked great every time. And essentially what he said is that you're not going to work. If you feed it back along the coax, depending on the length of the coax, you might get other resonances, and it also might not work. And I was wondering whether you had any comment on that. Over to you, Dick.
Very good information, Howard. Yes, every antenna needs the equivalent of a counterpoise. In the case of a symmetric half-wave dipole, the left-hand side of the dipole is the counterpoise for the right-hand side. You have to have a reservoir of electrons. You pump from one side to the other side in a resonant manner. You're pumping them back and forth on each half cycle. When you feed from the center, you need, because you see a 72 ohm impedance, you need a fairly substantial counterpoise. In the case of a quarter wave vertical antenna, it's a whole lot of radials. In the case of a pure vertical half-wave antenna, the best short circuit you can get is a quarter wave to an open circuit. In other words, when you hang a pure vertical antenna, the upper quarter wave radiator, the upper half of the dipole, you could operate it against a whole bunch of ground plane radials, or you can operate it against one single radial that hangs straight down. That's the other half of the dipole. And it gives you a perfect short circuit, per se, because it's a quarter wave away from an open circuit. Quarter wave resonant devices have that impedance inverting characteristic. When you feed a half-wave dipole from one side, because you're feeding one end, you're feeding a 2,000 ohm impedance instead of a 72 ohm impedance, the substantialness of the ground plane drastically decreases. Lots of guys have used just the metal railing on the balcony of their apartment, and that was enough of a ground plane radial, if a counterpoise, if the antenna was a half-wave resonant antenna. So you still have to have some kind of a counterpoise. There's got to be a place you're pumping the electrons from and to on each half cycle. That's what I think he discovered when he was connecting that the secondary winding of his step-up transformer to something. Yes, the coax cable can be a counterpoise, but it's not the right way to do it. Let me drop. Most of us would not rather use the outside shield of the coax cable as a radiator for a bunch of reasons. If you're a little unlucky, you can have a lot of RF energy in the shack and a fighting microphone. If it's a D104, you know, a metal case microphone, the RF in the shack can also affect your computers and other pieces of equipment. If the coax cable runs alongside of the elevator shaft in your apartment building, or it runs alongside of somebody's television set and you're radiating with that coax outside shield, you could drastically get increased television interference, telephone interference, radio interference, hi-fi interference, and so on. So using the coax cable outer shield as a part of the radiator most of the time is not the right way to do it. yeah, if you're really smart, you can make it the radiator, make it a specific number of quarter wavelengths long so that it becomes part of the radiating system, and you get a little more bang for the dollar, but you have to still ground it somewhere in order to keep it resonant. So in the case of a vertical antenna being fed from one end, a very convenient counterpoise would be nothing much more than a spike in the ground, or a grounding rod for a half-wave radiator fed from the bottom would do a darn good job. Up in the air, where do you get the counterpoise ground from to feed the one end of the dipole? It doesn't have to be a full quarter wave long. A quarter wave long stub off to one side that you connect to one winding of the second, one half of the secondary winding, the other half goes to the antenna. That would be ideal, and you can get away with less than a quarter wave in length for the counterpoise when you're feeding a horizontal antenna up in the air. Finding the local ground, so to speak, up in the air is a little bit difficult. Using another resonant structure to do it is an easy way to go. Lots and lots of ways of doing it. You start going through the pages of the fourth edition or any of the other editions of the Antenna Engineering Handbook, and you'll soon discover, let me drop.
Check me on there, I'll give you an elegant answer.
Glad to hear it. You'll soon discover there's 5,000 kinds of antennas. And so you'd be amazed how many variations on all of this can be made to work with only partial understanding of the theory. Let's see what the Bell's